This week on Straight Talk Africa, tear gas, stones and flames as anti-tax protests continue in Kenya. President William Ruto is facing the worst crisis of his nearly two-year-old presidency, caught between the demands of lenders such as the International Monetary Fund to cut deficits and a hard-pressed population reeling from the soaring cost of living. How did Kenya get here? How does President Ruto navigate the political landscape of one of East Africa's most democratically stable countries and economically developed nations that appears to be crumbling? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters here in Washington. I'm Vincent McCory. Now, activists behind Kenya's anti-government protests say they are rethinking their strategy after demonstrations on Tuesday were marred by violence and looting that they fear could undermine the movement and its efforts to push for changes. The activists say the violence was the work of goons hired by politicians to either discredit legitimate demonstrators or advance their own agendas. Protests have continued across Kenya despite President William Ruto's withdrawal of the controversial financial bill. Juma Majanga has been covering the demonstration since day one and sends us this report.
For the third week running, anti-government protests continue across the country in Kenya. So far, 24 protesters have been killed in clashes with the police, according to Amnesty International. The demonstrators say they are exercising their right to protest enshrined in the Kenyan constitution.
We are out here to give life to Article 75 of the Constitution, which says that we must participate, we must hold the state accountable. Yeah, when all other organs fail, when the National Assembly fails, when the executive fails, and when the judiciary even fails, the power is with the people. This is the people exercising that power.
The protests, led by young people and organized largely on social media, were initially sparked by a tax bill that protesters say was punitive. The government has since withdrawn the bill, but the protests are not relenting. They accuse the president of failing to fulfill his promises to them. William Ruto's government came to power with promises to the young population, such as job creation and reduction of the cost of living.
So, hakuna promise hata moja amefulfill. Now, we don't want you to fulfill anymore. We want you to get away. We want you to stay away from us. We want you out of that seat.
In an interview Sunday evening on Kenyan television networks, President William Ruto defended his government's track record, saying he has done the best that he could.
And I know what it means not to have a job, not to have an income. And that is why I am willing to put my career on the line, to see to it that to the extent that I can, young people have an income.
The president is appealing for dialogue following his decision to withdraw the proposed tax hikes, but the protesters say they don't trust him, refuse to meet with him, and have escalated their demands to include calls to root out corruption and for Ruto to step down.
It's fake promises. We are not even ready to participate in any dialogue with him. We don't want any dialogue with him. The options on the table are two. It's either he resigns or we take back our country by force. And I think that we will call it revolutionary violence. If they will be violent towards us, then we will also have to be violent. But not that violent to an extent of even killing our own people. We don't want to kill our own police. They're still our brothers. They are there to protect us. But why are they killing us?
The Kenya National Commission on Human Rights say at least 24 people were killed in clashes between protesters and police last week when Parliament was briefly stormed and a section of it set ablaze.
After being forced to withdraw the contentious finance bill of 2024 that sparked widespread demonstrations across the country, President William Ruto has called for dialogue with young people. But the protesters are hearing none of that. They say Ruto must go. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Parliament Buildings, Nairobi.
Well, thanks, Juma Majenga, for that report. The protests, which started as an online outpouring of anger over nearly $2.7 billion of tax increases in a proposed financial bill, have grown into a nationwide movement against corruption and misgovernance. To get a sense of what Kenya's media is seeing and how it is covering this unprecedented demonstrations, Alex Carrier, a journalist with KTN News, joins me live via Skype from Kiambu County. Now, Alex, first, give us a sense of how the media, including KTN, has been covering these protests in the different parts of the country.
Yes, it's very, very, very interesting times, if we may really, so to speak. But we, as the media, have always managed, rather, tried to be as impartial as possible. Although, of course, this has come with its own consequences in the fact that, if you recall, on the day that Parliament was breached, KTN was one of the stations that were threatened with closure because of the way we were covering it. But still, there's a new challenge that is emerging beyond that, because from what we have seen in the past two protests that happened last week on Thursday and also on Wednesday this week, there is that dilemma that we are facing of whether this is the protest that we were covering before or not, because the violence has been more directed towards protesters who are genuine, and also destruction of property, which is now being blamed on groups linked to the political leadership of the country, who might be feeling like they want to take revenge on the protesters and maybe just make them look a bit more like discredited and water down their demands. Now, for now, it's a bit of a challenge to distinguish as to whether to qualify these are the protests that were initially driven by the so-called Gen Zs, or now it's just a riotous acts by some goons who have been hired and other non-state armed groups that operate within mostly the informal settlement sides of the cities, who are usually activated to come and settle political scores for politicians. It's sort of like turning out some very, very different initially.
Yeah, and we're having some technical issues there. I just wanted to ask, from your observations, are you guys able to identify and kind of differentiate the current more violent groups of people compared to what you've been showing in terms of the age and the looks of those who have been protesting, like in the last 2 weeks, in the last protests, which were very, very peaceful?
Yeah, these ones are a bit more mature than what we know, what we knew, and they're also too brazen in their operations. Mm-hmm. They do not seem to be driven by any ideology that has been driving the previous groups that we have been dealing with. These ones are just here to destroy. They target anybody, any moving object, be it cars, being human beings, and even they have been destroying even property and their businesses. So when you look at it, in the previous cases, even businesses never used to close. Mm-hmm. The business owners used to order water and food. They were aiding in their own ways, even the churches. But these ones are a bit more indiscriminate and driven by nothing else beyond just destruction and injuring those who are participating lawfully in the protest for a cause.
Yeah, definitely a very different outlook. But we hope you guys keep safe and keep reporting as you always do, telling the story as it comes. So, Alex, thank you very much. Alex Carey is a journalist with KTN News in Nairobi, Kenya. Now, during a state visit to the United States in May, President William Ruto spoke to VOA, and among the questions he addressed was the state of Kenya's economy and his country's debt burden.
We have agreed that as a continent, and by the way, I had a meeting of the World Bank with 21 other heads of state in Nairobi a month ago to discuss the whole debt management infrastructure. And one of the issues that we agreed on is to make sure that the international financial architecture is not unfair to countries like Kenya, that we pay the same in terms of interest like other countries. As it is now, countries in the developing world, including Kenya, pay between 5 and 8 times more for interest for the same resources that are available in the global markets. So the conversation that we had with the United States is that they will lead and they will champion, and we appreciate that everybody has now come to agree that we need a fairer international financial architecture. And it is the reason why the United States have committed $250 billion and specifically $21 billion to the concessionary window of the World Bank under IDA, so that we can reach the target which we set in Nairobi of $120 billion. Mm-hmm. That will support developing countries, countries like Kenya, access concessionary financing, so that countries do not spend more in debt repayment and in managing the effects of climate change, but they will spend more in development, in health, in education, in social services. And I am very proud of the outcome of my meeting with President Biden and, by extension, the U.S. government. Both President Biden and the senators and the congressmen have agreed to double U.S. contribution to the IDA window, so that we can be able to do more with our resources and be able to access more concessionary funding for the development of our countries.
Well, Kenya's President William Ruto speaking to VOA's Huba Update. Now, for more perspective on what is going on in Kenya, Maimuna Mwidau, a political analyst, joins us via Skype from Kenya's second largest city, Mombasa. And from Nairobi, Edgar Githua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University. Now, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
All right, first to the lady in Mombasa. Let's look back. I mean, you have been around. We have all been around. We've witnessed so many protests, so many demonstrations over the years. Did you see this coming? Did you see this coming and taking the form in which it has taken, Ms. Mwidau?
Definitely, Vincent. This was the beginning of the younger generation that has grown within the 2010 Constitution of Kenya. Having been in the field of the politics, every generation seems to have its own opportunity and time. After independence, I think we had the first group of individuals who agitated for change, and that was the first liberation. Then there was a follow-up to the second liberation, which is a different generation altogether. Now what we are seeing is what was provided for or was created by the previous generation, I think generation, the baby boomers generation, that created the kind of platform that will enable the Gen Z to be able to operate. Because currently what the Gen Zs are doing is using the platform that has been created for them and actualizing the provisions in the Constitution, the 2010 Constitution. So this was definitely a process that was going to happen. However, we did not expect that the Gen Z would be happening at the moment because of the kind of traditional society that we have. But remember that we have come from a situation where we didn't have the internet to the large extent in my generation. But right now, there is this open platform of technology. The younger generation has come of age. There is a new constitution. So the environment actually is right for such a movement to come up and move the country into the next stage. This is not the end. This is just a continuation of what had been started with the first liberation, the second liberation, and this could be the third liberation, but this is not the end of the process.
Dr. Githua, we know that all demonstrations or protests in Kenya have always had somebody at the head. There's always been a leader or a group of leaders. This is the most remarkable protest that has no known leader or leaders. How do you explain how it managed to get together, but especially how the young people decided it's time to step forward?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Vincent. I think I'll re-echo what the previous speaker has talked about. You know, frustration cuts across the board, cuts across generations, and the Gen Zs in Kenya, watching their parents struggle, watching their parents try to eke out a living, I think the frustration has just gotten to them in realizing that their voiceless parents are also reeling under all these burdens. Remember, in this Gen Z group, we also have quite a huge group of these were university students, and some of them rely on the Higher Education Loans Board loans to be able to go through university. And they're realizing that there's cutting funding, there's proposals to cut funding to their loans, their futures are doomed, their futures are at risk. So you realize that this message on the platform of the internet, the frustration boiling over every day, university graduates not getting jobs, I think it just got to a place where the trigger, the finance bill was just that trigger that brought out that collective anger, that collective psyche of the nation. And the young people just decided enough is enough. Them being leaderless, for me, I am not surprised, because these Gen Zs talk, they are tribeless, and they do not, they are partyless, and they have honest conversations with one another. They see each other struggling at university, trying to make ends meet. Some can't afford meals, they buy for each other meals. And they have lived in a very open society that has been egged on by the internet, the advent of technology and internet. So for me, I see the platform being, it is years of frustration, and now seeing their parents reeling under this huge tax burden and, you know, this slowing economic downturns within Kenya, that is what triggered it. And so when the conversation began with a few people online, what do we do? And then, of course, these tax measures, which the president rightly withdrew very quickly, especially when he touched on bread. If you remember the Arab Spring, if you touch on bread, the Arab Spring touching bread, that was a key for revolution. The French Revolution, prices of bread, Russian Revolution, bread. So the moment you touch bread in Kenya, I think his advisors got it wrong on that. And these are the triggers that really now brought this huge conversation. So it is a conversation that will keep on going on, and the people are expressing themselves, and we hope that there will be a peaceful outcome at the end of the day.
Yeah. Now, Ms. Mudau, the president, President William Ruto, of course, in his campaigns targeted especially the youth and the women and made a number of promises. These young fellows are saying you have not fulfilled any of those. In his interview just a few days ago, he said, well, I have done my best. I've actually done things. Is there a disconnect? Is there a lack of information? Or is it so that actually the youth cannot point to any of those and see them directly benefiting from any of the policies that have been put forward?
I think President Ruto made a lot of promises, and one of them was the 50% women representation starting from his cabinet, and that he was not able to achieve once he was appointing his cabinet. And it was clear to the women that that promise was never fulfilled. With regards to the youth, I think he made a lot of promises in terms of the quota that the youth are supposed to get. But it seems most of the times when the president appoints, the youth are left out. He talked about the youth fund. That is one of the promises he made. But the youth do not seem to be able to access some of those opportunities. So I think in a sense that all the promises he had made, he was not able to achieve most of them for reasons best known to himself. But as Kenyans here in the country, we do understand some of these dynamics. There's a lot of tribalism. There's a lot of favoritism that makes it difficult.
And actually, I want us to continue with that line of conversation, but it's time now for a short break. When we come back, we will continue our discussion about the widespread demonstrations in Kenya, which started as a protest against tax hikes. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. when we are told only part of the story. We lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
As journalists continue to report on complex and difficult topics, including conflict, natural disasters, and human suffering, studies like the one done by the Harvard Kennedy School indicate it's increasingly exposing them to trauma and affecting their mental health. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will explore how mental health is discussed in the media and why female journalists are at a higher risk. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
Welcome back. We're talking about Kenya's protest movement, which has no official leaders and largely organized via social media. I am with Maimuna Midao, a political analyst, and Edgar Githua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. Now, before we went to break, I kind of cut you off, Ms. Midao, and you know, you don't want to get in trouble with a lady, a powerful lady. So let me come back to you so you conclude your thought. You talked about the issue of ethnicity has kind of interfered with some of the implementation of this. And we do remember a senior official in the government said that the government belongs to certain stakeholders who are more important before everybody else can be considered. That's on record.
Absolutely. I come from the coastal region of Kenya. And we have felt strongly that successive governments have given us a wide berth in terms of representation, in terms of appointments. And we can understand what the Gen Z are talking about. We know how it feels to be left out of government. We know how to it feels to be left out of given opportunities, despite the fact that we have highly qualified people who are definitely, if given an opportunity, would make a difference in the country. So what you are seeing basically that has come out through the Gen Zs is that they are feeling the pinch, but the beauty about the Gen Zs is that they are not tribal. So they're not looking at it from a tribal angle, but basically looking at it from a purely Kenyan angle, because this generation has grown up together across the various counties. They've come together through universities, through colleges, and their thinking is different. So even they are demonstrating shows that they are thinking about issues. For the first time in the country, what we are seeing, we cannot even identify which tribe they come from. All we are seeing is these young people, these young Kenyans, who want to see change in their country. Unlike before, the demonstrations were either from one specific region against another specific region. And it has been very common knowing that Central Province against Nyanza, that is very common in Kenya. But today, what you are seeing is a young generation of Kenyans who identify as Kenyans, their problems are the same across the board. That is the most beautiful thing that has come out of this demonstration by the Gen Zs. And they are also articulated. They are very informed. So it is very easy to identify the Gen Zs who are meaning positively and the goons that have interrupted their demonstrations. Mm-hmm. That is very clear.
And we hope that will get even more clear. Dr. Gedua, you know, the The president has, of course, acknowledged in his latest interview that, yes, we need to cut back on government spending. Yes, we need to stop this display of opulence by politicians. Some of them who just came into the system 2 years ago, and now they're even flying helicopters and big, big machines. The question is, what could the president have done, especially having said that he came into the office and found no money in the coffers, and yet in that short of time, on his own acknowledgement, there has been this extreme display of opulence by politicians associated with his government. What could he have done?
Yeah. Thanks, Vincent. It's a tough one. I think being president is about balancing a lot of interest. Remember, these are constituencies that supported him to get into power, and these constituencies represent very huge vested interests. So on one hand, he wants to keep the campaign promises that he made about cutting down on expenses. And on the other, he has these powerful political leaders who I do not want to say hold him hostage, but who he really cannot manage or rein in because they also represent very strong constituencies. And remember, he's looking at 2027 and he probably wants to get elected and he wants to have a smooth ride. So it is a bit of that balancing of interest that I feel went a bit wrong. For me, I think those austerity measures that he would have instituted, I think he did not really rein in on that. I'll take you back, Vincent, to the former president, Uhuru Kenyatta, when he was Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance. He had instituted austerity measures about on just a basic thing, the vehicles that are going to be used by government officials. And he had suggested that they should not be above 2,000 cc, and the Passat, VW Passat, was the car of choice. And for some time, Kenya thought that is a damn.
I think I've lost you there, Dr. Gidua Maimuna. Let me come back to you. In terms of taxes, you know, the young people are not saying they don't want to pay taxes. They say they want to see a difference in how their taxes are being used and also to see discipline within the government. From what you're seeing today, do you envisage that changing henceforth where the leadership will listen and also inject discipline in the system in terms of the use of public funds?
Vincent, for the leadership to listen, they have to be forced to listen. What I have seen lately is that senators have been discussing on how to cut down on their expenses, which they feel that it is unnecessary, and that is a positive move from the Senate side. I'm yet to see or hear from the parliament, but a few parliamentarians have come out very openly to say that there are some excesses and they think there is a need to cut down on those excesses. Similarly, there is a pay rise for the senators and the parliamentarians. There is discussion going on that is it really necessary at the moment? Maybe we can shelve this for another time. So there is a little bit of change of mood because this is a revolution of the mind. Mm-hmm. So there is a definite change of mood because everybody now is aware that the Gen Zs are watching and they are listening. We have seen quite a number of issues coming up on X, and it is being shared across the mobile phone. Okay. You know, mobile phone is very easy to use in Kenya.
Sure.
So definitely there is a mood of change, and I hope this will continue. And the president will keep his word in terms of the austerity measures.
And listen to the youth. Thank you. We have to end it here. Thank you very much, both of you, for being on the show. Maimuna Mudau is a political analyst, and Edgar Githua is an international relations, security, and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.